So we're going back to Numbers for the sermon. Those of you who may have forgotten by now what happened, this is the fifth of the so-called murmuring verses. Isn't that a great name, murmuring verses? Because there are five different passages in Numbers where the people are complaining about something. And so they're complaining. Remember, if you don't remember the narrative of the Bible, where Numbers happens is after people have come out of Egypt, but before they've gotten to Israel. So God pulls people out of Egypt, out of slavery, and then they sit in the desert for 40 years. Right? Sit with that for a second. In the desert for 40 years, or at any rate, for a very long time. Not a very pleasant thought, right? I mean, do you want to be in the desert for a long time? So the people get to complaining, and they say, well, we were in slavery in Egypt, but at least we had food, you know, at least we had shelter, and now we're out here in the desert. Well, the interesting thing in the murmuring verses is that God tends to answer their prayers. They have no food, so God sends manna from heaven. They complain because there's no meat, so God sends birds. It goes on like this. And usually the people are cursing Moses and Moses' brother Aaron, the chief priest, for bringing them out of Egypt. Well, in this verse, they turn to cursing God as well. You know, usually God responds to their complaints, I am the Lord your God who brought you up out of Egypt. This time they said, yeah, but you brought us out of Egypt so we could starve to death in the desert. And so they're a little complaining about it. And so then God reacts, as we expect God to react, by sending poisonous snakes after them. How many people expected God to send poisonous snakes? Okay, good. There are some people shaking their heads. Thank you. Good to know that sometimes people listen week after week in this church. So yeah, God sends the thing that seems vengeful, right? Then Moses, like all good ministers do, prays for the people. And he would have done it even if they'd not asked him to pray for them and intercede for God. But they do ask, and he does pray for them before God. And God says to Moses, okay, I've sent these snakes. What we'll do is we'll build a staff, and people will look at the staff. It'll have a snake on it, and the snakes will lose their power over the people. The venom will go out. And if you read this literally, it's a story of transgression. The people complain against God, sin against God, and redemption. They say, we're very sorry, and God says, I will heal you. So that's a good way to read this story. But I look at it even in a different way, which is I look at the snakes metaphorically, right? You know, as we talked about in the children's sermon, they kind of slither around and they sneak up on you. That's the danger of snakes, right? The snakes you can see aren't the snakes that are dangerous to you. The snakes that you can't see, that are invisible and come up and bite you in the ankle, those are the ones you need to worry about. The way I read this is you see all of the complaints. You see all of the people who are saying, well, maybe freedom isn't for us. Maybe life would be better in slavery. You see those doubts set in. Maybe we're not good enough to be saved. Maybe God doesn't actually love us since we've been brought up out of Egypt and now we're in the desert. And maybe we've just been brought here to die. Maybe we aren't good enough. Maybe there's someone to blame for our plight. All these things, this negativity builds up and people murmur and complain and point fingers. So the snakes are already there. And if you believe that, then God sends these snakes not to punish the people, but to show them that they are there, to show them that there is venom amongst them, to show them that their problem is not with God, it's with the snakes, it's with the doubts, it's with the betrayals, it's with the moaning. It's with all of those things that break them down and convince them that they should not have a relationship with God, that God can't love them, or maybe that the people around them cannot be trusted. It's all of those doubts and worries, and it's hard to name those things. It's hard to call them out and say, this is the thing that I'm afraid of. This is the thing causing me problems. So God sends flaming snakes to bite them and kill them, because then it's quite obvious what the problem is, right? I mean, I wouldn't have enough food. Okay, now there are snakes trying to bite us and they're on fire, right? Is that something that's obviously a problem? Do you want me to send flaming snakes after you? No, obviously not. The snakes are the problem. And God points out to the people, look, you think your problem is with God. You think your problem is with Moses. But the problem is you have all of these fears and you don't know how to articulate them. You have all these doubts and you don't know how to say, I am afraid that we are going to die here. So instead you say, oh God, did you bring us out just to kill us? You point the finger somewhere else and it eats away at you. So God sends them the message, we can name your fear. You are afraid of dying a horrible death. So here's a snake. But then God says to Moses, okay, let us heal these people. Let us put a lifeless snake high above you. Not in a tree where a snake could cause you problems, but we're in the middle of a desert. Let's hold it up on a staff where even if it were alive, it couldn't attack you. You'd know where it was. Then we'll take all the venom out of it because we'll make it out of bronze. We will take all the power out of that snake and you can look up at it and see that it is just a snake. It is not your certain death. It is not God abandoning you. It's just a snake. You can remove the power from that snake. So when you see your doubts and your fears, you can find someone to blame. You can let them fester inside you and cause you to be frustrated, cause you to be afraid that you are not loved, cause you to be afraid that your entire life will be spent hurting other people and yourself, or you can name your fears and you can say, I don't like being depressed, but I am. And this is a problem that I have, and I don't know if I can overcome it by myself, but this is a thing that happens to me. And you can say, I'm afraid of not having a job because I'm afraid I can't feed my family. And I'm afraid that it means I'm not a good person and that I'm not good enough and I'm not worthy of their love. You can say that out loud. You can say these fears. You can say, I'm ashamed that I had that baby all alone, on my own. Because these are things people feel. But then we're all here to say, you know what? We love you, and there's no need to be ashamed. There's no need to be ashamed of these things you don't want to share. We love you. We love your child. You are a loved child of God. We know that sometimes you suffer from depression. And we know sometimes that you are sad, which is a different thing. And we love you. And don't let that have power over you, because we will not let it separate you from us. Right? Lift them up. Lift all those things causing you doubts and causing you pain up for all to see. I mentioned in the prayers that Terry Pratchett died this week. The last time I mentioned him, no one really had heard of him, but he's a famous fantasy author. He's sort of the second best-selling author in England. But that's not what he's been so known for these past few years. He's been known because he was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's disease. He, who is an author, creates fantastic, intricate worlds, had this form of Alzheimer's that no one was able to diagnose for years, really. He knew there was something wrong, but he was clever enough to hide it. He was clever enough to pass it off as some kind of eccentricity until finally he was diagnosed with it, and then they said, okay, go home. And then he was filled with rage. Why? because he was diagnosed with this. And the doctors just said, okay, go home, and there's nothing we can do, basically. And he said, surely we can do better than that. Surely we can do better than to send people home to do whatever they do without any support for this momentous thing that has happened in their lives. And so for the past 6 or 7 years, in England anyway, he's sort of known as Mr. Alzheimer's. He said, rather than withdrawing from the public and hiding what is happening to me and being ashamed of this disease that I have, I am going to bring it into the light and let people see this very scary thing, because surely it is scary, and talk about it and say, there is help for people, there is help for families, but only if we talk about it and share it and lift it up in the light and not be ashamed of it, not to be ashamed of, as he said, the invisible idiot that follows me around, moving things I've carefully placed in one place and putting them in another, but acknowledging that that's what's out there and saying, yes, this is scary, but it need not be the end of your relationship with other people. It does not mean that God does not love you. It does not mean that other people do not love you. And it does not mean that you need to carry the shame and doubt that you are being punished or that you are isolated from one another. Instead, let us lift up these pains, lift up these fears, share them in our families, in our church families, with other people, so that the evil within us and the evil in our midst can be named, and we can take some of that power away from it. We can take some of the venom out of the snake. We can take some of the fear out of our hearts and say, this is our life together, which has ups and has downs, but always has God's love and our love. Amen.